anyway, that this subject tonight is totally Iowa. And because when you speak upon the word of manna, that's all the Iowans know about it, but it makes people maybe from out of state maybe feel a little differently about it. They might be well aware of it, and then there's a chance that they wouldn't be. Well, I would assure you tonight that I'm not talking about, as subject material, that colony over here in eastern Iowa, a very interesting, very unique place, but that's really not the thing that I'm after. The thing that strikes me is this, that the word is actually found in the Bible, and that was one of the great things that we want to emphasize. Of course, I hope that that's not uncharacteristic of me, because I've always demanded that a subject be based upon something within in the Scripture, because if it isn't, then there's really something wrong with it. But this word is a real strange one, because it's only found one time. And if you're sort of racking your brain just a little bit and wonder, well, where have I been all these years? I've read the Bible for 50 years or something like that, and you don't relate to it, well, don't feel too bad. Due to the fact that it's stashed away deep in the Old Testament, probably in a book that isn't read so often, because it's a very difficult book, it's hard to come to grips with, hard to get a chain of thought. Not that it's impossible, but it's difficult. The place where the word of manna is found is in the fourth chapter of the Song of Solomon. In the fourth chapter of the Song of Solomon, and in verse number 8. And we find out that the word of manna happens to be the name of a mountain. The word of manna is the name of a mountain found in that passage. I'll read it to you. I know it might be a little out of context, because I'm not going to deal with the before and after as far as this word being located or something like that. He says, come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, and with me from Lebanon, look from the top of Amana, from the top of Senir and Hermon, from the lion's dens and from the mountains of the leopards. Now this is something for us to think about, that this was a mountain and it was named Amana. Now the thing about this, I don't know who named this colony over here. I have no idea. I don't know the origin of it. But at least they do have a biblical background on it to some extent as far as the term being biblical. And the word amana within itself is a word, term, that means to be faithful. The word amana actually means to be faithful. One individual right here from Pleasant Hill, when I was in study here at Dean Avenue, of course, the subject had already hit the press over here. They had it ready to go out. And he asked me about it. And, of course, I was pretty mum and so on like that, because they didn't want to take away something from it. But he was telling me that he made a trip over there and he listened to the things that they had to say and so forth. And he found out what the word meant. I asked him what it meant. And it meant essentially what I've told you tonight. You can rephrase it just a little or something like that. But it actually means to be faithful. And that's a real good slogan, isn't it? You know, these people, now, whether you're in subscription with them or not, and I'm not up here advocating their doctrine particularly, anything like that, but I can see how this could be attached to them, because they were actually born in adversity. They came out of it, came out of some type of persecution and so on, and For what they believed, they adopted a slogan that meant to hold to what they believed. Now, I'm not saying what they believed was absolutely correct. I'm not affirming that. But the point is that they believed it. And that was a kind of a motto. That was the idea, to be faithful. And now you can just forget all about that colony over there and ready to move into the subject. Because this is a good one for us, too. Because the idea of being faithful is the absolute necessity. This is the thing that we just have to be. There is no substitute for it. And there is absolutely nothing. And I think it's time for us to sort of buckle on our armor. I think it's time for us to gird our loins. I think it's time for all of us to recognize the idea of being faithful. Because if we're not faithful, we're nothing. That's absolute. That just has to be. You know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things said and a lot of things taught in our day as far as needs are concerned. I hear people speak upon a subject, well, the greatest need is this, and the greatest need is this. I'm not quite in subscription to that kind of an appraisal, to be frank with you, because what one man might see as the greatest need, another man might not see as the great need, or the greatest need. When you say something's the greatest, you take in a little too much territory. But let's just put it this way. I would say one of the greatest needs, and I think this is the way to say it. I think one of the greatest needs for the church today is to adopt this kind of thinking of being faithful. Because you'd be surprised what this is able to achieve if people just do that. I've heard people say, well, the world's greatest need is evangelism, or the world's greatest need is this. I wonder about this sometime. Maybe the greatest need, or one of the great needs, is actually being faithful. I was pondering this. I pondered it a lot, too, in order to get a hold of what I have. There is a good possibility that from the starting of the church on the day of Pentecost, and that gets you way back there, on that day of Pentecost, back in the very beginning, the initial part of the century one, if you will, that if there had been absolute faithfulness on the part of every believer, from that time right down to our time, there's probably a pretty good chance that the world might already have been evangelized. Just think of that. Maybe the crucial need for evangelism today is the fruit of people not remaining faithful. You know, if every person that had been baptized into Jesus Christ had remained faithful, how strong would we be? Now, I base my thinking upon this, that the goodly portion of the earth would have already been covered, and people had been handling themselves pretty well, upon a statement in the first chapter of 1 Thessalonians. And, of course, their fervor and their zeal and also their skill, I guess I would have to say, that regarding the gospel is really couched in some beautiful passage here. Because in 1 Thessalonians, the first chapter, and we're going to take a look at verse 8. He speaks in verse 6 and 7 about how they had followed them, and with much joy they had achieved some things. He says that they were examples to all that believe in Macedonia and Achaia. Now listen to verse 8. For from you sounded out the word of the Lord, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place your faith to Godward is spread abroad, so that we need not to speak anything. I have never read a verse that was as full of teaching along this particular subject as that one. Here's an inspired apostle saying this. What outstanding things this is. He is saying now that from you, the church at Thessalonica, sounded out the word. And sounded it out to what extent? That your faith also in every place is spread up. It's just spread. And so completely had the Thessalonian group evangelized their own area, but also adjacent areas, Macedonia and Achaia, that the apostle said, I don't have to speak anything. Now, I tell you, that is covering the territory, isn't it? Now, what is the result of this? I'll tell you what caused this, rather. What is this the result of? It's because the Thessalonian church was a manna. That's why it was. The Thessalonian church was a manna. It was faithful. That's why I said if every person, every group had remained faithful over the years, there's no telling. I couldn't even hazard a guess as to what this old world might look like from a religious standpoint. But I know it would look a lot better than it does now. All because of the individuals dedicating themselves and being faithful to what they believed. And what they believed was Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and the church of the Lord Jesus Christ. So you see, the word takes on a broader scope than we think. We're clear away from everything else now and looking at it. You know, one of the most difficult things, and we try to make this lesson just as dual as we possibly can, One of the most difficult things that church leaders face, one of the hardest things I believe that elders face, one of the most difficult things that deacons face, and then I'll go a step farther and just engulf the whole group. The most difficult thing that you as a congregation or any of us as a congregation face, the most difficult problem we have is trying to keep people from going back into the world. That's the hardest thing we have. Trying to keep people from backsliding. Now you might hear quite a bit about this and so on. But just what about it? What do you think about this? That is a difficult thing. And no congregation or no state has a corner on this. I don't know very much about the churches in Des Moines. What I know has been real good, real positive. But I know they have problems keeping people from going back into the world. Pleasant Hill has problems from keeping people from backsliding. The church at Nixa has problems along that line. Every church in Kansas City that I know, and I know them all, they're having problems. Every place has problems like this. And it's one of the... Why is it so severe? I'll tell you why. The reason this is such a severe problem is you can't get a handle on it soon enough. You can't get a hold of it quick enough. Now, I had to just guess at this percentage, but I think it's an educated guess. Do you realize that by the time people show symptoms of backsliding or going back into the world, by the time they show an external symptom, they're 75% gone. Now you just think on that. Now you see, if I could get the symptom, if I could detect just when an individual starts this, I could handle it. I could handle it with ease, I believe. But when the person is 75% gone, and I'm probably conservative, it might be 90. Before you get a symptom. Now that's not true with a doctor's profession. Generally you get a symptom pretty early, I judge. There's something. I know I had a pretty good fever before I broke out with the measles. Not that there was anything you could do about it, but at least it... The thing was there. Well, you see, it isn't true in the religious realm. What's the answer to this? It takes some real pondering and also some anticipating. And then I think you can't get a hold of it all. But probably. We need contact. We need encouragement all the time. All of these things can be used as a sort of a prevention. Now, I do a lot of things to my automobile a long time before I need it. No. I've never had a fan belt break with me on the road. Why? Because I replace them before they show the signs of wear. I just know, well, when you go 2 or 3 years, you're on borrowed time. I think you do that too a lot in a lot of other. Use what you call preventative maintenance, and it's very fine. Now, I know it's hard to spend money for something you don't need. But I rationalize and say, well, one trip out on the road by a wrecker or a service station would have bought me all the fan belts I could have used if I'd lived to be as old as Methuselah. So you see, when you look at it this way, it's not the real expensive thing. And then there's some security attached to this. What I'm after is this. If we can keep encouraging people, I think this will help. Encourage them before you really recognize that they need encouragement. And everybody needs it. Every person. I delivered a speech here a couple of years ago maybe on the idea of encouragement. I'm not giving you a rerun. But then repeating truth really isn't a bad thing after all. So you see, here are things. Oh, I know the symptoms of somebody getting slack, starting to miss occasionally, a little less participation, a little less talk in class, a little less cooperation, a little less volunteering for various things. Sure, you can pick up those things. But look, try to figure out what on earth caused this thing. And as I say, if I had the answer for that, I could use every lady in the audience tonight as stenographers to answer my mail, because everybody in the world would want to know the answer if I had one that I could just put down just in ABC. But I think keeping an energetic service, keeping an encouraging service, watching out for little things that might be detrimental, that's not only for elders and deacons and preachers, it's for everybody. That's exactly right. No question what this might do. So in view of this, the amana raises itself. Be faithful. Let's not be one of those that slip, because you're not going to help anybody by slipping. I think every person in every congregation ought to resolve within himself, I'm never going to cause this congregation a problem, and I'm never going to cause the elders to have to work overtime on my behalf. You say, maybe I've never heard anybody say that. Well, I did. Not just here either. When I came from Martinsville, Indiana, and placed my membership at NICSA, a statement I made to that eldership, as long as I am here, I am not going to make your work one bit harder. I'm going to try to make it easier. And I think everybody's attitude ought to be that way. Now, that doesn't mean that if something false was taught, I wouldn't create a problem by rebuking it. No, they knew better than that. If something false is taught or something is wrong, then everybody's obligated. But I'm talking in the general sense. Don't make anyone's job harder. Let the cry be a manna, if you will. Be faithful by standing on your own feet, if you will. And that'll make the wheels run smoothly. Now we're going to take your mind down a little mathematical roll, if you will, for a while, and see what we will learn about this. I wonder how strong. I'm just speaking numerically now. I know there's other ways of being strong, even more important than numerically. But let's just use the number system, if you will. What if everyone, I may have mentioned a sentence or two of this in a study, in a lesson at Des Moines, I don't remember. But if every person in the community, since we're here, why don't we just use your community? If every person in this area that had ever obeyed the gospel and remained faithful, can your mind figure out, can you get it going? Is your imagination Well, is there enough elasticity in your imagination to get it this far? How large would the congregations be right in this area? If every person that was ever baptized into Jesus Christ in the Kansas City area to remain faithful, what do you think the numbers would be down there? Even in our small town where I live, if every person that had started out had remained faithful, it staggers me to think how large we would be. All that it would have taken, folks, is a manna. Be faithful. Hang in. And don't be disturbed by things. Put first things first. Of course, now, people, you can just count. You can start thinking of people that maybe have been in your group. You can start numbering them. And it won't take you long to get to a couple dozen. It won't get you long to get to a three dozen. You go back a little bit in a few years, you can come up with a great big number, can't you? Wouldn't that have been fine, somebody says. Well, surely it would have been fine. But you know, even that doesn't tell the whole story. Hang on to those numbers, if you will, because they don't tell the whole story so far. Because what we can't reckon with, even in our imagination, you can't come up with this one, but we know it's there. That is, you can't come up with a number, I mean. You think of all the people that started, and if they'd have remained faithful, what it would be. But the thing that we don't know is this. You do not know how many people that those people might have influenced or converted. And look what that number could be. If one just converted one, look what it would be. You see, it almost baffles us, doesn't it? Almost staggers us to think just what this could be. I think our group in Nixa could probably, I think it could easily be right at the present time, probably 300 or 400 at the least, as contrasted to about 100 that we have now.
Well, we've made some growth. We're larger than we were 3 or 4 or 5 years ago.
Not big, but maybe 25%, I think, from 75 to 100. Certainly nothing to boast about, but yet it's better than going the other direction. Let that be as it may. Oh, what it could be if the cry of a manna could have been impregnated in the minds of people. The idea of being faithful. When you get to studying the epistles, sometimes I get to sort of categorizing. I get to itemizing. I get to columnizing. I suppose if I'd have written one of the Gospels, I'd have been closer to Matthew than anything. He was a tax collector, and he just itemized his. He took the 13th chapter of the book of Matthew and just filled it with parables. He didn't splash them all over the place, you know. He just kept them. He run the ledger on this. You can just see this characteristic, can't you? Those are interesting little sidelights. We just toss that out for no extra cost. And we leave it with you. But you see, when you get to itemizing this, and I did this, and I was surprised at how often the word faithful or its equivalent is brought up in the epistles. Unless you have something in your mind, a particular thing in your mind, these things go unnoticed. Now I'm calling your attention to the idea of the teaching in the epistles where it tells people to remain firm, steadfast in the faith, things like this. All of those equivalencies of being faithful. And you're going to be surprised how often they're interspersed in the New Testament record. Faithfulness. Look what John did to the 7 congregations there in Asia, in the book of Revelation. Faithful, faithful, faithful. If you're not, I'll remove your candlestick. All of that. The word wasn't used, but the cry of a manna went through the whole New Testament. The cry of being faithful went through the whole book. And that's the thing that counts. Because it's only the person that finishes the race that's crowned. Now, you can't win a race without starting. I'm aware of that. You've got to start. But I also know that every starter is not a finisher. And it's the finisher that receives the crown. It's the one that achieves it. I'm not saying that everybody would have been able to convert it, everybody, if they'd remained faithful. I'm saying that the percentages would really be with us, though, and there'd be a lot more than there is. And yet, it isn't such a great thing. You know, it really doesn't take a lot of... It's great, I don't mean that in the sense maybe you might have taken it. It isn't such a complicated or a very detailed thing that only the intelligentsia can handle. That's what I'm after. Maybe the first sentence was easier to understand than the last. But we just leave it. Now, you see, you don't have to be you don't have to have any degrees to follow the Lord and stay faithful. You don't have to be an orator. You don't even have to be an astute student. You see, it's within the capacity, it's within the abilities, it's within the grasp of every person. All that you have to do is just stay with it. Now, once in a while, the Bible condemns being stubborn. But on the other hand, a little degree of stubbornness is all right if it's focused in the right direction. I think we ought to have conviction and be just stubborn enough to turn back upon temptation or turn our backs upon things that will downgrade us and lead us astray. That could be a righteous kind of a stubbornness, couldn't it? And if we're able to do that, I think that things will get better. They have to get better. When people are just determined to hold out and do what they ought to do to save themselves, just that will just do so much. Would you share with me the cry of a manna?